Welcome to the Casual Temple Podcast, episode 30, and I'm your host, Marilee Duffy. At the Casual Temple, our mission is to discover our connection to the unseen world of spirit and how that empowers us to know our true selves. But before we start, a little favor, please follow or subscribe and hit that heart-shaped like button on your favorite podcast platform. Our amazing guest this week is the creative powerhouse that is Lucy Pierce, who is an author, artist, publisher, editor, and teacher. In 2014, she started Womencraft Publishing, a platform that's all about empowering women, authors, and artists. We discussed her co-authored book called The Kitchen Witch Companion, which is a collaborative effort with contributions from 13 authors about making magic in our kitchens and homes. Her newest book, Crow Moon, is a unique work that started with a real-life experience of witnessing a large group of crows roosting for the night. So stay tuned to the Casual Temple Podcast, where the magical conversations are ordinary. Welcome to the Casual Temple. This week, I'm thrilled to have Lucy Pierce join us as our guest. Lucy is a creative force, author, artist, publisher, editor, and teacher. Lucy's impactful work has reached a global audience as the author of several life-changing nonfiction books, where she delves into women's healing through archetypal psychology, embodiment, historical awareness, and creativity. In 2014, Lucy founded Womencraft Publishing, a platform dedicated to publishing game-changing books by women for women. With over 50 books published in the first decade, Womencraft Publishing boasts a diverse collection of titles by international female authors that features cover art by talented women artists. Thank you, Lucy, for being on the Casual Temple.
I'm so glad. I can't remember how we first met, but my daughter is called Merrily, and I remember you commenting or appearing on my Instagram. I don't know if that was the first time we met, but that was the first time I really twigged you. And I was like, oh my God, you're the first grown-up Merrily I've ever come across. So I was just so excited.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cute. Yeah, I think it's such a cute name. So I'm glad your daughter is named Merrily. Is it short for anything or is it just Merrily? Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I definitely remember that conversation. It was very fun. Yeah, I saw like your work and like all the cool things you're doing through Instagram. So that's how I found you. And like, yeah, so much cool stuff that I'm excited to talk about. So we just start from sort of the beginning. So if you can kind of tell us a little bit about sort of your life that kind of puts you on your spiritual and magical publishing artist path that you're on today, kind of start there.
Sure. So I was really creative and magical throughout my childhood. And it was, yeah, creativity was my safe place, my happy place. I come from a very creative family. Three generations back have made their living through various forms of creative entrepreneurship. So that's what I come from. That's what normal is to me. Although I did wish I could have normal parents sometimes, but I now see what an absolute blessing it was to have being the person I am. So I fought hard to do art at A level, which is our kind of, you know, the exams you do before you leave school, because I was also very academic, and, you know, school saw me as, you know, one of their people who are going to go off to the most prestigious universities. And I was like, I need to do my creative stuff. So I was really big into drama at that stage, too. So I was directing plays, I was writing plays, I was acting, loved that. So I went off to drama school and did a year there. And within the first 4 months, what I now know is anxiety ramped up and ramped up, but I didn't have a word for what it was then. All I knew was I wasn't functioning and was very, very stressed. And then I was getting sick because I was very stressed. And then my migraines were coming on and it was just kind of all snowballing. So I dropped out at the end of that first year, went and did a more academic course. And then I kind of stopped painting, stopped writing, because I really decided I was going to be normal. I decided that the problem was that I was too weird. I was going to, in this lovely kind of early 20s where I was going to perfect myself. So I used all these self-help books to try and make the perfect me. And that required not being weird. So dropped the creativity by the wayside. And, you know, I'm pretty useless at being normal, so I didn't enjoy that much. Went off traveling for a couple of years whilst we were applying for our PhD places, and just constantly dealing with anxiety, not knowing what that was. And then after a year learning to teach drama and English, I got pregnant earlier than expected, and so suddenly kind of life kind of did a 180, as rather than diving into a PhD, suddenly I was diving into motherhood. And what was really unexpected for me was, in my head, becoming a mother meant that everything was going to end, my life was going to end. And actually what happened was that my life began, in that my creativity just came back with a massive whoosh through my pregnancy, and then straight after having my first child, which nobody had ever told me about, warned me about might happen. It was just like, it was an unstoppable force. And so I spent the next couple of years, having another two children, trying to find the right ways and places that I could express myself creatively, because suddenly it wasn't something I could choose not to do, something was something I had to do. And my creativity has always been connected to my spirituality. It's always been connected to my magic. Like the three are the same thing. And sexuality goes in there too. Like they're all the same. It's the life force coming through, looking for expression, and asking us to dance with the unknown, asking us to dare to try, to dare to push the boundaries further and further, to explore more and more of the world and ourselves. So naturally, as my creativity started blossoming, all the other areas of my life did too. So I gradually found a way. Books emerged from me. Suddenly the need to write was just there. It was not a kind of a, oh, would it be nice to write a book? It was like, I have to write, and I have to write now. So The Rainbow Way, my first book, came about when I was, my three kids were, I think, 4, 2, and 1. They all had chicken pox, and they'd been sick for a week, climbing all over me, needing, me to cuddle them and, put cool stuff on them, and just, they were just miserable, itchy, hot little children. And I didn't realize at the time that I was autistic, and I was feeling beyond overwhelmed, sensory overwhelm, just couldn't cope with this constant being needed, and thought I was going to go crazy. So I literally just started writing a book about creativity and how important it is for mothers, and how mothers can access it, because that was what I needed. It was this lifeline that I needed at that time. So that's what most of my books have been. They've been for, some of them have been for past selves of mine, and some have been selves that I'm stepping into. And many are for friends that I know who are going through those places and times now, but they're always very much written to and for someone I know. Which I think is why so many women remark that it felt like I'd written the book for them, and I was speaking directly to them, because I was, I didn't know who they were, but it was directly to and for a person. And I think there's something about that direct communication. Like, there's a gazillion books out there. You open the covers of a book, you don't know what to expect. And suddenly, when you find somebody talking directly to you, it's a really powerful thing. So I think that's been a large thing about my books, about why they've been so popular, because I try to give words to the unspoken and the unspeakable parts of ourselves and our lives, especially as women. And that's really scary work to do. It's really scary to try and find the words and then to speak them out loud, and not only just to the people you know in a small circle, but out loud into the world. But it's an incredibly powerful thing I've come to see. So that's become my role, is finding the words for the next step on my journey, and sharing them.
Wow, so beautiful. Yeah, I love such a, yeah, you told your story like a story. It is so beautiful. Yeah, and I agree about like the stepping into your power as a woman and your voice and letting putting it out there, because we tend to not a lot of us don't do that. And I know your Instagram has, you speak a lot about that too, for sure. That's like a big message.
Well, it's been such a, I think it's probably been the biggest kind of pillar of my own personal work and personal growth is moving from being silent and feeling that things are unspeakable, or feeling overwhelmed by stuff that I cannot name or cannot even feel or cannot put an image to, but I know that it's there inside me and it's so big and it's so overwhelming, but I don't know what it is. And I think most of us experience that. I mean, I think being autistic, I probably experience it a bit more because my ability to sense my inner world is kind of many times very muffled. So it makes me work extra hard at it, and it makes it a real practice that I do. And I just think that, if we weren't where we are in women's history, I wouldn't need to do it, but our psychology, our philosophy, our spirituality in the mainstream doesn't have those answers. It doesn't have the descriptors of what it is I'm experiencing. So hence why I have to go off the beaten track and try and figure it out for myself. But, that's changing, and I'm really proud to be a small part of helping that change. And I'm always so grateful to come across other creative souls who are doing the same, because it can feel very lonely when you're writing books all by yourself in your bedroom and making art, and so to kind of know that there's all of these hundreds of thousands of creatives and spiritual magic makers out in the world doing that too. And we're each doing our own little bit of the puzzle, and we're kind of joining together with other bits of the puzzle as we discover them. And but we're all doing it together, and we're all doing that work. And we're not alone in it. It's just such a lovely feeling.
Oh, yeah, so beautifully put. Yeah, and that's my observation too. I love everybody doing their unique piece, and it's a great tapestry. So I love that you called that out. And
And
especially,
in patriarchal culture, what we're very much taught is, you have to be an expert in order to put your work out there or to be listened to, and that there isn't room for all of us. There's only room for a few, and that's the important people. And so I just think it's so important that everyone knows, like, there is room for you. There is room for your voice, your perspective, your insight, and it's needed. Like,
Yeah, of course. And especially when you explained that you're trying to put words or describe or art to something that you can't really describe very well. And I think a lot of us feel that, right? There's like something there, and I can't really put words to it. I mean, I can try, but it's very difficult. And so who's an expert in that, besides your own self?
Right? But
Ugh.
again, like in our culture, we're not encouraged to do that. We're very much encouraged to read the stories of other people or to go to a therapist and for a therapist to kind of help you fix it or whatever. Whereas to actually just learn to trust yourself and to learn the tools that you need to access these parts of you and to be able to move through and past trauma, for example, if that's kind of acting as a gatekeeper to certain parts of yourself and blocking them off, I think is a really important and valuable skill. And, one that good therapists do teach you so that you can do it yourself. Good, any sort of, physical therapists do the same. They teach you how to fix yourself. They teach you how to, journey with and explore yourself rather than make you reliant on them. But as a whole, as a culture, there is this thing of kind of infantilizing us slightly and kind of making us always need to reach out to the expert to get the answers, as though there is one answer, one truth.
So within that, did you have any sort of support within your family or guidance, like anybody you did look up to, kind of on your journey, or was it all self-examination?
I mean, I've had a huge, I think the most helpful things to me have always been books. Books have been my ways into worlds of knowledge, knowledge domains, giving me new language, new ideas. And I don't have to deal with people in order to get that knowledge, which makes my life much easier. I've had some very good therapists along the way, not only, kind of like talking therapists, but also, doing EMDR, like the eye movement therapy, massage therapy, physiotherapy, but kind of working on much deeper levels. So I've had lots of very helpful people, as well as very wise friends, husband, and parents who are, both on their own journeys too, and both still learning and growing. And, I'm very touched by the fact that both of my parents read all of my books and are willing to talk about my books with me. Because, a lot of people I know wouldn't read my books. And when you're going to appear in a book in various ways, it must be challenging. But, it's been really lovely to see how my work has helped the whole family grow and change and discover new things. That's really powerful, to be giving language to my parents and giving insights to my parents, as well as, the flip side, that it helps and supports my children too. So it's very satisfying.
So with yeah, that sounds like a very satisfying, fulfilling sort of conversation that you get to have with the people in your life that care to read your books. So that's really wonderful.
And the things that I would have like been scared to bring up into conversation, do you know what I mean? They're
Totally.
not kind of normal dinner party topics, most of the things I write about. And I love to dive deep, but there's always this being state of being in vulnerability when you do dive deep into something like that. Whereas when you've written it down and someone reads it, like, it's absolutely terrifying at the time. But it brings you another layer deeper into your relationship of the things that we can now talk about, the things that we have shared language for.
And it's more of ease when you can quietly write those things down, right? Instead of maybe at a dinner party bringing it up, and then you're whoever's reading it, receiving it, can quietly read and, like, absorb it,
Exactly.
you
And
know?
they can process, and there's not going to be that awkward thing of watching them process and then having to talk then. Everyone gets to, I mean, it's how I've always communicated the big things in my life. Ever since I've been a small child, I've written people letters because I find conversations tricky, but I've always been able to rely on writing things down to get to the real crux and the heart of something and say what I need to say. But then it is the give the letter or send the letter and run, and then wait terrified for the response, not knowing if it's going to be days or weeks before it comes. But for me, that is how I can communicate.
Oh, that's such a good, I never thought about it that way, but yeah, that's kind of like, I guess, my preferred way as well. So that's pretty funny. So I know you're a very magical person. I saw, I got your book, The Kitchen Witch Companion. I know it's like part of like another collection, I believe. And it's so cool because you kind of write about how the kitchen is such a magical place. Can you kind of give us a little taste of that, what you're kind of exploring there?
So it's part of a twin pairing. So Sarah Robinson, who I co-authored it with, wrote an extremely good selling book called Kitchen Witch. And it was food, folklore, and fairy tale, because that's her real passion. And we had lots of letters and emails and messages from people saying, but what about the recipes? And then like, okay. So I absolutely love to cook. Food is my love language. It always has been. Eating out together, going to friends' houses, having friends to us, cooking for those I love and eating is just an absolute joy to me. And you know, when life isn't good, it always seems to kind of make it bring back the magic. So I've always wanted to write a cookery book. When I was 18, I wrote to my favorite cookery book authors and said, "How do you get started in cookery writing?" So for me, that was the first dream. But I live in a very small village where there are five cookery authors. Most of them are best-selling, some of the
Wow.
best-known cookery authors in our country. So it kind of made the market a bit small for me to kind of enter into.
Right.
So I realized that wasn't going to be my field. And also, you know, to get started in any writing, you have to tend to do a lot of writing articles on different topics to kind of get your voice out there, get yourself known. And the idea of writing, you know, recipes for, say, moussaka or leek and potato soup, and having to kind of say interesting things about them, and you know the recipe is going to be the same as anybody else's recipe because how different can it be? It just that filled me with dread and boredom. So the Kitchen Witch Companion is the opposite of that. It is everything that is meaningful and magical about cooking. So it's the first half of it is theory about what kitchen witchery is, how we make magic in our kitchens, in our homes, what that means, what that can look like. And we've got I think there's 13 different contributors from diverse backgrounds and around the world who share their insights and recipes as well. Because like we were just two of us and we both come from similar-ish south of England backgrounds, you know, white middle class. So there was only so much diversity we can bring to the thing, and we really wanted to kind of increase that. So we had this beautiful melting pot of lots of different people with different practices and backgrounds. And so the writing about magic, the thinking about what is magic, how do we make it in the kitchen, what does that look like? And that then leads us into kind of feminism, you know, because we've got the kitchen being the place of for the domestic goddess or for the housewife, and how we feel about those terms and the expectations that are put in a gendered way on our shoulders as women when it comes to kitchens and cooking and cleaning and cleanliness and domesticity and making the magic of Santa and every, you know, wedding and birthday cake and everything that women have to do to be good women. And so it's a real kind of exploration of all of that and unpacking of the bits that we love of the kitchen and the bits that have challenged us and how we can find new ways of really making magic in our own ways rather than feeling like we have to conform to some vision of what the perfect kitchen witch or the perfect domestic goddess looks like. So that's the first half. And then the second half is our recipes that are really meaningful to us. So there's family recipes, there's recipes that we've done for seasonal celebrations. It's organized around the seasons because that's very much how we both kind of cook and celebrate. So it's interwoven with ways of celebrating the wheel of the year, ways of celebrating nature's bounty at each of those times. There's lots and lots of edible flowers in there because that's a big love of mine. There's the symbolism of the ingredients we use, as well as the actual magic of how they work in our bodies, the things that they give to us, and how we can work with them magically. So there's each of these threads is just woven through the whole thing. So it was just, oh, it was a delight to work on because, as I said before, like most of my work is very solitary. Writing is a very solitary thing for me. And so to be doing it with somebody, to have somebody there who I love working with Sarah. I've worked on six of her books now. It's the first book I've ever co-authored, the first book she's ever co-authored. And just to have somebody there, so it wasn't always my problem that like what do we do now or how do we do this. It was there was always someone to talk it through with. There was always somebody else's ideas coming bubbling through. There was always somebody else's expertise to hand that over to and say, look, that's your forte, run with it. So like we've got meditations going throughout it. You know, she's a yoga teacher and is very popular meditation teacher online on Insight Timer.
Hmm.
And so we have these meditations to really get you into the magical headspace so that even if you don't want to like cook anything, you can still experience the magic of the seasons and kitchen witchery through your imagination. So yeah, it was a joy. And then I illustrated it too, which again was another joy. I've done, kind of illustrations of a sort in my books, Creatrix and Full Circle Health, but nothing like the scope of this. And obviously it being a book on food and cookery, like the images of the herbs and the flowers had to be identifiable so that, if you didn't know what something was, you could see the picture and then go out and look for it in the garden or the hedgerows rather than just, kind of be an expressive kind of illustration. It had to be really actual. So that was really, I mean, it was a daunting thing. When I started, what I was going to do was just, we had some images that we had bought for her original Kitchen Witch book, and I was just going to add in the ones that we couldn't find anywhere. But it just snowballed into something else, and just every day I would send her another like 10 illustrations I'd done. I was in bed with migraines, and so I couldn't read, I couldn't concentrate on stuff, but for some reason I could draw, and so I just drew and drew and drew and just absolutely loved it.
Wow. What a cool process though. Yeah, it's very like I noticed that too. We're going to talk about your other book, Crow Moon. I'm very excited. But yeah, you have this way of like really thinking through the process of like this level of the process. Let's explore that. This level of the process, explore that. Like the way you walk through it is so whole. I'm probably using the wrong word, but it's very wholesome. It's like the whole thing. You're very considerate of that. And so yeah, you and Sarah did a great job. So
Thank you.
yeah.
I really enjoy taking things as deep as I can and trying to find all the dimensions of them.
Yeah.
Because, everything's been done before. It's certainly not the first book on kitchen witchery or the first book of recipes that's ever been published. So it's like, how can I make this mine? How can I take it in a direction I've never seen before? How can I find the depths in my own practice and experience? And then how do I go deeper still? So that's always the challenge I set myself. And it's fun. I mean, it really is fun because, in daily life, with the exception of doing things like podcast interviews, people don't tend to ask you, what's under there and then what and then what.
Yeah.
So it's just lovely to be able to do that with a topic that you are passionate about, that it has always been close to your heart, that you've immersed yourself in other people's work for so long, and suddenly it's like, and now it's my turn. How much deeper can I go? What
Yeah.
is what has been missing for me in the things that I've read before? And that's for me always, because there's always doubts that come into your mind. There's like 400,000 books published a year. Does the world need another book? No. But no, I have never written on this topic. I have never given my perspective, my insight, my missing pieces on this. So there will never be another book like mine. So that's
Yeah.
okay. There's space for it then.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's so inspiring. Yeah. Everybody write a book. Like get your ideas out there. That's so cool. Yeah. So thanks for walking through that. Now, yeah, definitely. So Crow Moon. I live in the Pacific Northwest. We have crows here that are very intelligent. My husband and I, we feed the crows outside. We have a really great relationship with them. And so, yeah, I was so excited that you were doing a book about on crows. And again, it's like very multi-layered the way you wrote it. Your illustrations are amazing. I like the dual chromatic black and white is so cool looking. Like everything about it, I love. So can you tell us about like what inspired you to write it?
I absolutely will, but first I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
Was it what you were expecting?
No, I thought it was just going to be like a history on crow, basically, like, right? Like a history, but there's some of that. But then there's like your story with the crows, then there's poetry, there's quote. I mean, it's Awesome. Like, it's basically like I was pleasantly surprised.
Good, because
Yeah.
my intention when sharing it was I didn't want to let people know too much about what comes later on in the book. I wanted it to be a kind of an unfolding and a journey of discovery. So it was a tricky book to market in that sense, because obviously when you it's not a fiction book, so there isn't kind of like a spoiler that I can give on one level. And yet there is. You know,
Yeah.
there are bits of it that I do not talk about in interviews because I want people to discover it for themselves.
Totally.
And so, but it's tricky because, you know, I'm somebody who loves to share about everything and love to kind of give insights into all the bits and pieces. And yet with this, it's like, how do you tell people about this book but not tell them at the same time? How do you share about it yet keep it hidden? And in a way, that's the theme of the book is, you know, kind of what is hidden, what is in the dark woods that we cannot see or cannot talk about? And how do we get into the dark woods? And why do we go into the dark woods? And what the dark woods are? So that's a kind of a large piece of the puzzle of it. So Crow Moon started as a real experience. It started with me going into the woods at dusk. The dog walkers were coming out, and suddenly the sky just became alive with thousands upon thousands of blackbirds. I called them crows. I later discovered that they were rooks where we live. And it was just an awesome experience. Just standing there by myself in the darkening woods with these tens of thousands of blackbirds flying around me, cawing and moving away and together and dancing in the air, that's settling into the trees, and then just silence as though nothing had happened. And I was just, it was such a direct experience of the magical, the otherworldly. And yet it was just some birds flying over my head and going to their nests, which they do every day during the autumn and winter. I'd just never seen it. And I was amazed that nobody else was there watching, because it just felt like such a, it was a life-changing moment for me. And there was no one to share it with. There was no one to say, oh, did you just see that? Did you feel that too? It was just, so it was just a really bizarre experience of the magical bang in the midst of the mundane everyday world, and just unexpected, coming from nowhere, and igniting within me a curiosity about why these birds are flying like this. Is this normal? Is this something strange and weird that I've, you know? So I started this adventure asking those questions. Why are there so many crows in the woods? Why are they flying around? And it became, as I was saying before, this thing of going down and down, layer after layer. Why are humans so fascinated by crows? Like, what are crows? Why crows rather than other birds? Because I've always liked birds, but they fascinated me, and they fascinate a lot of humans. So what is that? And then going the next layer down, why do we hate them so much? Because there's a lot of hatred for
Yeah.
crows in our culture, and that's really historical too. So there's these two threads of crow as something very kind of treasured, something that appears in a lot of stories and myths and legends, all the way up to today, as a symbol that is both revered as something of deep knowledge and wisdom, but also feared, connected to death and bad omen. And so it was, why have we as humans connected these particular meanings to these particular creatures? Then we start to explore symbology and why we make symbols and how we create our own languages of symbols as humans. Then it starts to go further into the dark woods, following the process of my own life, which was a gradual disintegration of losing meaning in my own life, losing a kind of a sense of the life force, being totally burned out, totally exhausted and overwhelmed, and not knowing what path to take, which way to go forward. which then developed into incredibly intense long migraines. I went from having, a migraine once a month for 1 or 2 days to having 15 or so days of migraine a month,
Oof.
which is, it changes your life pretty fast. So there was this kind of excitement of what I'd just discovered in the natural world, and this being brought to my knees by pain and having to be in darkness and not be able to be out in the woods discovering more, and a feeling of losing my creativity at the same time as being creative and finding new creative avenues, but this constant fear of how it's going to turn out, what's going to happen, and images and symbols emerging that really scared me, and I didn't know what to do with them. So I decided to follow them rather than kind of shut them out like we do with nightmares and kind of say, I'm not going to think about that, I'm not going to look at that. Instead, I followed these strange, disturbing images, one of which was the crow, another is the caped woman, the caped figure that appeared to me. And I followed them through a process of Jungian active imagination, shamanic journeying, witchcraft practices, and creative practices, a practice I created, established, evolved, whatever you want to say, called word and image, in order to follow these images, to see where they came from within me, what meanings they held, and to see where they were trying to lead me. So it was a really interesting creative process for me. So most of my books are word-based, just ordinary paperback books. And as I said, with The Kitchen Witch Companion, I illustrated it, but they were illustrations, whereas in Crow Moon, a large part of the journey is through the images. The images themselves were leading the way. They were dictating the narrative. The words at many places came after the images. So it was a totally different way of creating a book. And it was both exciting and very scary as to know, is it going to work? Is it going to work as a book? Is it going to be readable? Is it going to be of interest, or is it going to be too weird? And then again, to sell it, to share it with the world was like, oh, sugar, how's this going to land? And actually, it was my fastest selling book of all time. So there we go.
Oh yeah.
I was
Let's just
sure it was just going to be a little niche book that only my hardcore fans were going to buy and read. And it was going to be, a cult classic that sold like 200 copies over its lifetime. And that was that. And people would occasionally, you'd know a hardcore Lucy H. Pierce fan by the fact they say, I've read Crow Moon, and you're like, oh wow, you and about five others.
Well, I'm glad it was a surprise for you. So how it turned
Total
out, that's
surprise.
really cool. Yeah, I think the thing for me, right? Yeah, as you know, I love crows, right? So that was a draw. And then just the way the image, like the how the book is beautiful, like the way you design the cover, it's just you're it's very attractive to me. It's like intriguing. So I think you just did an excellent job. So
Thank
it's,
you.
yeah, that image. And it's funny because you were like, I had to work, you changed your process, right? Instead of words first and then image. And it, and this thing started with an image essentially of the crows, right? And you're like, what is this? I couldn't figure that out. So, wow, cool. I love that you just kind of walked us through that. So it's very awesome.
And the thing is, like, that was my 12th book. So it's not my first rodeo. And the thing about writing books is you've got to, if you want to make a living as a creative, you have to bring your readership with you. You can't kind of totally jump ship and do something totally left field, but you've also got to keep things interesting for yourself as a creative. You can't be constantly kind of redoing the same thing. So it's that constant balance between, is this going to keep the reader as happy? Is it going to be what they expect from me or want from me? And is this nourishing something within me? Is it challenging me enough? Am I being challenged to take that next step in my own creative journey? Because they all take the next step in my own psychological development, in my own kind of giving language to stuff within, but to give oneself a creative challenge too is interesting and exciting, because creativity is partly about aesthetics and making art of some sort, but it's also about using our brains creatively, thinking outside the box. And so it's always nice when it can fit both of those challenges.
Is this you have like your own collection of books, and you also do your publishing company, Women Craft Publishing. What would you say is your the biggest gift of being a publisher? What's your favorite thing about being a publisher?
I think it's partly the not doing things by myself, because it's that feeling of being creatively involved, working creatively alongside other people is just so nourishing. And being able to share what I've learnt along the way with our authors, most of whom are first-time authors, because obviously, we share, I share my editorial skills, we share our marketing abilities, all of that, which any publisher would do. But what we also do is to share, I mentor our authors, and we have a kind of a community of our authors. So when they launch their books into the world, they're not alone in that emotional process, that spiritual process of birthing a book into the world, which is extremely vulnerable. It's intense on an energetic level, and it's something that I don't think most publishers, mainstream publishers, would even notice or acknowledge. And yet, being an author myself, I really know how big that is. And so I think that's the thing that I really give to our authors, which differentiates us from any other publisher I know of, and it's certainly why we've now got authors who are choosing us, who have published, they have been mid-career authors, they've published several books with different publishers, and they can see that we are offering something absolutely unique within the publishing world. And that's really it's a real honor to have that recognized. Because we don't have the reach of, Hay House or HarperCollins or anything, but we have the integrity and we have the vision, which is beyond just, how much money can this make?
That is so, that's such a cool, again, because you're an author and then you kind of understand the process and helping and mentoring people. Wow, what a special thing. That's awesome. So we're
I just think that publishers, because most haven't been authors, most publishers have only ever been editors or creating, producing books in terms of creating an object or creating a text. I think the missing that lived experience of what it means to be an author, all the complex threads of what it means to be an author, what it means to sell yourself, what it means to create to a deadline, what it means to have somebody go through your work and rip it apart and say that's not okay and rewrite that. They're all really challenging things, which if you haven't experienced it yourself, you wouldn't know.
So it's nice to have somebody at least who's walked the same road. So that's
Yeah,
really
they
cool.
know that I would never ask them to do anything that I wouldn't do myself, or that I don't underestimate what I am asking, which, I think especially for creative people generally in our culture have just been kind of are not respected. When you are developing your creativity before it makes money, that part of the process isn't respected at all. And then when it does make money, you're just harnessed as a cash cow. And you're expected to churn out more and more and more of the same. You're just expected to produce in the way that a cow in a dairy farm produces milk. It's just, kind of food in one end, milk out the other. There's no respect for who you are as a human, how you're developing, what challenges you, none of that, that doesn't matter. And I think it's so vital to respect the humanity of creative people, because they give so much to our collective culture, and they're doing so much work that most people don't have the time or the energy or skills to do themselves, and are bringing back the things that sustain us, the things that nurture us, the things that create all of the things that we love to do and wear and listen to and read. And like, they create what we wrap ourselves with and define ourselves with and identify ourselves as. So I really feel there's a need for respect there.
Yeah.
And support, you know, deep support of the whole creative process.
Yeah, you're right. I think, yeah, especially mentioning sort of like, you're not considered either an artist or a writer or whatever creative field until you've sold something, until it has, you know, and there might be
made
something
it
to
big.
that. Yeah. Made it big, whatever that means. And so it kind of, you're, so when you're even starting out, you're like, I'm just doing this, you know, not, I'm not a writer. I'm not an artist. I'm just, you know, because I can't be called that yet. Oh, wow. Yeah, I love that humanity that you're bringing to artists and creatives and your writers. So that's really great. So we're definitely wrapping up here. Are there any upcoming, I know you've just kind of gone off this book release, but are there any other projects or events that you want the listeners to know about?
I mean, there's no such thing as a quiet time in my life unless I'm floored by some sort of illness. And even then, I still seem to kind of create like a mad woman.
Right.
So my to launch Crow Moon, I created a conversation series as a kind of promotional tool with some of the women I had quoted in the book and have always longed to have conversations with. Most of them are authors, several witches. And just, it was just an absolute joy. So I had a lot of people asking for them to be made publicly available. So I launched, as one does in the couple of weeks after you've launched a book, I launched a podcast.
Wow.
So it's been whizzing around my head for several years. And I just suddenly, it was like, okay, this is the moment to do it. So it's called Creative Magic. And it explores both creativity and magic and how the two intersect. And so for some people, it's more about the creative process, and for others, it's more about magic, and for some, it is about both. So I have a really interesting array of artists, authors, singer-songwriters, permaculturalists, witches, podcasters, actress, you know, really interesting range of across the creativity spectrum. And so the first season is called Wild Initiations, after the series of interviews. So it includes the series that I had, as well as several new interviews. So I'm really enjoying doing that. And then if this is out, then I've got my e-course Word and Image, where I share my process about this word and image process I was talking about that I used for my book Crow Moon, and that's starting on the 3rd of May, and it's a 4-week e-course for people to work at their own pace, lots and lots of exercises and insights into how we can harness the left and right hemispheres of our brain, the words and the images, and how we can weave them together to harness our creative power and dive deeper into our material. So there is that.
Lucy, my goodness. Yeah.
As well as the upcoming books. We've got three more books coming out from Womancraft this year, plus the Womancraft Compendium to celebrate our 10-year anniversary at Womancraft. So we've had 200 contributions from Womancraft readers and authors, which I'm currently compiling into an anthology of women's words. The title is Weaving Our Way Beyond Patriarchy. And so it's a very powerful collection of writing, and that will be out in November.
Wow. Phew. You're definitely a force of lots of yeah, you're an inspiration. I love it.
Thank you.
So yeah, all sorts of cool things coming up. I do remember seeing about your podcast now, and now I have to put it in my podcast loop because like it sounds awesome. Like I love that you get to talk with people because it's like my favorite thing too.
Yeah, it's so lovely because I'm somebody who struggles with talking to people, kind of in busy situations or, just kind of normal social situations. I love to dive deep, and so this gives me the opportunity to talk to all of these people whose art or creative work or magic I've loved from afar, or I've had, conversations with or collaborated in little things with, but this gives us a real chance to deep dive, and it is just a joy.
Wow. Yeah, that's so great. I'm so glad that you found an outlet for that because it's really fun. So where can people find you and all the cool things that you're up to?
So my website is lucyhpierce.com, and there you can find information about my books, more about me, links to upcoming events and teaching. For people based in the UK, I'm teaching at an event called the Witches Revival in Lancaster, the second weekend of August. I'm going back for a second year. That was great fun last year, and I'm back with Womancraft. We've got a stall there, and I will be teaching a writing workshop there. At Lucy H. Pierce on Instagram, which is where I love to hang out. The same on Facebook, but it tends just to be copies over from my Instagram content. At Creative Magic Podcast for the podcast, and womancraftpublishing.com for all of our books, signed copies, e-courses, and at Womancraft Publishing on all the social media too. So there we go. That'll keep people busy.
Yes, for sure. You are busy. You're going to keep us all busy, so it's a great relationship. So the kind of the final thing, you've shared so much wisdom already, but is there like some final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with us?
I'd love to say there is, but I'm done.
You already, like I said, you already gave us so much to think about. So everybody go back and re-listen if you missed anything, because there's a lot of nuggets in there for sure. Oh, well, thank you, Lucy. I so appreciate your time and all your wonderful work. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary.
Lucy is such an amazing, inspiring person, and I'm so glad to have spent time with her. Do check out the show notes to learn more about all the wonderful projects that Lucy and Womancraft Publishing are working on. Do remember to like, follow, and subscribe to The Casual Temple on your YouTube or favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow. Thank you for listening and being an important part of The Casual Temple.